Welcome back, flight fans. Your GM, as always, Dwayne, is here, not for a session of Flight Risk, though, as I'm saying this out loud, I'm going to have to make plans to have all these people on Flight Risk as guest stars sometime. Because, you know, Flight Risk, we love having our guest star arcs, and I think these four people would make such a great group, so that is going to be put on the calendar, and I will be bugging them after the show. But we're going to be doing one of our GM round tables. If you listened to the last one, we had a group of great people on. We were discussing world building, and I did tease that we were going to do a villain round table. I did say those people, but then I realized, you know what? I was tired of them. I needed fresh faces, fresh voices, and I went to the internet and found the cream of the crop, the best people out there, highly recommended players and GMs to join me today. We're going to go around and let them all introduce themselves. We're going to start with Sarah. Sarah, how are you? And thank you so much for joining me today.
I'm great. I'm excited to be here. I'm apparently the cream of the crop. I'm going to put that on my resume.
Hey, I have that on my business card. So, Sarah, tell people real quick who you are and, you know, what do you do?
Hi, everybody. I'm Sarah Roberts. I'm the Hype Goblin. I currently GM two public live-streamed campaigns, one on my own channel under the name The Hype Goblin, and one over on Indoor Adventures. I've been creating tabletop content for the last 4 years now. Oh my gosh, it's 2024. for the last 4 years. And I'm a budding voice actor, currently acting in Tubular Teens with Titans as Desdemona. Is that the name? Desdemona?
Desdemona. Yes. She usually goes by Desi on the show, but Desdemona's her full name.
And another project that will be announced probably in the next coming months.
Exciting. New projects are always very, very exciting. All right.
Oh, very.
Next, we have Ben. And before I let Ben talk, I know I've said this before to Ben privately, but I'm going to make sure I say this publicly, that Ben is one of the reasons Flight Risk, my show, even exists. When I started this like 5 years ago, I was listening to his show, The Hiding Way, Heroes of the Hiding Way, reached out to him on Discord. We had a couple great conversations that really gave me the confidence to carry on with the show. So whether you like our show or not, it is all Ben's fault.
Thank you, I guess.
So Ben, thank you. Thank you so much for lighting that fire that got me to where I am. So I just wanted to thank you on air.
That really is awesome. It's one, especially with the first project I did, Tales of the Hydean Way, and then on with Heroes, it's been something that I've been hoping to do is inspire that, well, if I can do it, obviously everyone else can. Because I have, when starting out, I barely knew what the heck I was doing. And, yeah, now I've got a great cast on Heroes, and we're doing some of the really wackiest things that I can think of.
Yeah, I'm definitely enjoying the new season. It's very fun. I mean, all the seasons of Heroes of the Hiding Way are great, but yeah, the new people in there, it's a new energy. I like it.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Next, we have Sam. Sam, thank you for joining me today.
Yeah.
Please tell the fine people who you are and what the amazing project you make.
Yeah, I'm Sam. I am the GM and host and creator of the Starbirds podcast. I also want to give props to Ben. They were some of the first folks that I reached out to, and we played a wonderful starship encounter where we were testing out new rules with Brandon and a few other folks, and so generous. And I was also I got excited from that and went into wanting to make some kind of project with some of the folks that I did gaming with here, where I'm from. And it's, ever since it's been really exciting. Haven't been able to publish anything recently, but, we have something new coming out tomorrow. So we'll, anyway. Yeah.
Fun factoid. If you are a listener of Tubular Teens with Titans, I think every time I've had a character in a car or a radio on playing music, it is a Starbirds song that has been on the radio every time. So if you listen, when I think there's three or four songs you sent me, and I've always, there's like 5 or 10 seconds, I think, in almost every episode of one of your songs playing, and as someone shuts off the radio to start the scene, or as it transitions out, you hear your music. And plus, you guys were the band at the high school prom in the, I think, season one finale.
That's right, yeah. It was a lot of fun, yeah. We just take songs that are, you know, common, fun, kind of lighter songs, and then do sort of rewrite the words and put it to Star Wars, kind of the, yeah, anyway, put a little Star Wars content in there, so.
Cool, so Sam will be back when we are doing our actual play as a musical episode. We'll have Sam.
Right. That's a lot of pressure.
Last but not least, we have Erica. Erica, thank you so much for coming on. Please tell the people who you are and the wonderful things you make.
My name is Erica Goodwitch. I am, I've been referred to as an actual play mercenary, and I gladly accept that as my title. You can actually, I am one of the new people aforementioned in Ben's show, Heroes of the Hydean Way. I play Norin there. And I have played a number of characters for Mark over at Nightcast Creative and Andrew at Dicey Cantina. I co-produce Path of the Storm, a High Republic story, with them. And I will be launching my own Star Wars actual play next month, February 7th. Or I guess, I don't know when this is releasing. But on February 7th.
It'll probably be probably around that time. I'm aiming the beginning of February, so it'll be right around then. So perfect. That's exciting. That's very exciting. I always like new podcasts because, I have like an hour and 20-minute drive to and from work, so I have plenty of time to listen. So I'm definitely excited to throw something else in my rotation. All right. So our topic today is villains. And we know with every great story, every great hero, they are often defined by their villain, the person who motivates our story. Without our villains, without the quote-unquote, I don't want to say evil because not all villains, in my opinion, are evil. Without that antagonistic force, our stories are just hanging out in a tavern, which is a fun story, but we do like action, adventure, motivating our characters to do things. So we're going to be discussing the villains of our story, how to make them more engaging, how to make them more threatening, how to just cultivate this well-rounded, not a single-dimensional type thing. So we have a bunch of cool topics. We're going to bounce around. Wherever this conversation goes, it's going to be fun. So we're going to start with our first section is understanding villain motivations. So one of the things that I try to do when I am creating villains or characters, either for a scripted thing or an audio drama, is really getting my villain to have a proper, well-rounded motivation. Now, there is a place, like I say, the Joker is a fun character, but a character that's just to be destructive gets boring after a while. I like a character that has a deeper wanting, a deeper motivation. So how do you guys go about when you're either creating new characters? Are you, if you're doing a licensed product, we all do a lot of Star Wars stuff, or even in the D&D characters that already exist, how do you get that character to have a good, well-rounded motivation that isn't just a twirling mustache tying the damsel to the railroad tracks cliche? And it lands on Ben. Ben, so when you are doing your villain, you're trying to find that motivation. What do you find helps you create a good, solid, well-rounded villain?
For a antagonist, it entirely has to deal with a connection to the characters. If there's no real connection to the characters in what they're doing, it just falls flat to me. At the moment, in the current structure of Heroes, for the current season, I don't have defined villains yet. But I'm in the process of creating them, and in doing so, it's entirely looking at character backstories and how things have gone on for them. Someone that they've lost track of, something that's happened in characters' backstories, and then fleshing out the person who's done that. Making it personal for the character, which makes it personal for the player, which means the player's invested, And by that, I really hope the audience is too.
Fair. Sarah, your input on this.
I think thinking about your character, your players, and their motivations as their characters is incredibly important. If you don't give them a reason to fight whatever the antagonist is doing, then it's just a very boring good versus evil a lot of the time, or maybe evil versus good if you're playing an evil campaign. Mm-hmm. But something I like to do is I like to look for that one thing that I know everyone in the party wants, and the villain is going to take that away from them. And I usually make sure that initially the villain is someone that they want to be friends with, someone that they would enjoy spending time with if circumstances were different, until it's time to flip the coin and reveal who they are.
That's actually pretty clever. Yeah, having them drawn to somebody that is that villain reveal is always a great moment when you see it either in cinema or in actual play, when all of a sudden you're like, what do you mean the bartender was the villain the whole time? We told him all of our mm-hmm. secrets. Like, well, yeah, that's why the villain was always winning, because you were telling him all your secrets.
So, yeah, my most recent campaign, they met the villain in the first 10 minutes of session one, and then they ended up living with her for 4 levels. So,
nice.
Yeah, it was great. Nice.
Okay, cool. Sam?
Yeah, I think that the motivation needs to be both clear, and also there needs to be more that's revealed as you go. I like the idea of a villain that, like for instance in Starbirds, as they're entering in through the first few episodes, they're discovering things about this this asteroid in space, and they're seeing the handiwork of the villain before they ever meet them. And from that, they're piecing together what sort of an enemy they're facing, what they're doing in that situation. And then having that, once the reveal happens, it's, oh wow, this all starts to make sense. It all pieces together. And yeah, the motivation and the background for the villain for that, you know, for our podcast wasn't personal yet. In some other stories that I've told way back in the day when I did my very first campaign, it was episode one, they're working for someone, and then at the end realized that that person was a villain. And that was such a fun moment, and really got them excited about the story. So yeah, it's very key. Without a great motivation, the story, it seems like the characters are just spinning at a windmill, essentially. They're flailing at bad things itself, as opposed to a, yeah, anyway.
No, that makes sense. Yeah, I do remember listening to those first few episodes, and it was a great slow burn as the characters exploring and learning more. As the listener, you're seeing the characters make connections, and like listening and like realizing things the players haven't realized yet, and go, how do you not see this? Yeah. That's always a fun moment.
It is fun, very fun.
Erica?
I think to build on what everyone else has said, a villain is really informed by the characters of the story. The villain exists as the antagonistic force, or as the person for the heroes to overcome. So if their motivations don't ally or act as a foil or as an opposition to the character's motivations, then it kind of falls apart. They're not well meant for the story that you are collaboratively telling at the table.
So now this kind of makes me think of, like, we've talked before on other episodes I've done about the importance of having a session zero, and especially with the world building with your players and that kind of stuff. Is that where those ideas come from as you're working with your players building this world or building their characters? Do you grab those ideas? They're like, oh, I might be able to pull on that thread later.
Oh, yeah. When Zach and Enri are my players for the first episodes of Legends of Sisymon, and I had a realization about Zach's inspiration for their character, and that sort of helped me make my series of villains from there, because I understood, like, oh, this is the story we're telling based on your motivations. I get it now.
Now, I want to touch on something that when Ben was speaking about how he doesn't necessarily have the quote-unquote, like, villain established yet in the story. Like, there's not, like, that one person. Is there a place that you can... How long can you have a story without a singular villain? That you can have maybe an antagonistic force that you don't necessarily know. Like, they're going against the Empire, but you don't reveal the Emperor. How long of a burn can you play on that before you think that either the players or the listeners might get tired of it?
Well, my substitution for having a villain per se has been, at least in this, has been dealing with a more player versus environment or character versus environment setup instead of a player versus a specific antagonist. They're going into situations to save people or track down to essentially stop a disaster or recover from one. And I think in that, the characters helping others is its own series of drama to it. So it's not necessarily a villain per se, but it's a situation to overcome. Now, also, it's somewhat of a prologue. Mm-hmm. And I have an overarching meta plot that I'm slowly ticking things off. And we're getting to the, okay, they fell out in the middle of nowhere for a couple things. They've dealt with a mining disaster. They've dealt with the people in charge deciding, yeah, we're piecing out. You can all deal with this ship that's broken and the wild things that come from that. And now they're going to be seeing the nasty side of the Empire in my next arc. And for that, I'm trying to make it a lot more personal, a nebulous structure is, it's like fighting anything. You have to make it personal. You have to have a totem for it, that we're actually seeing it, or it's more of an avatar, where that person, that being, is the one that we're focusing on. That's how I'm taking it. And as for length, I love the FFG adventures, but I would argue that this is going to be the first actual villain I've got in Heroes.
Okay.
Because the adventures from FFG don't really have effective villains. They have theoretical villains, but they're not there in the day-to-day, at least not in how I was running.
That's fair. I think, one of the problems when I am working on the actual play is that I think my brain slips into the scripted drama of making sure I have a hero and a villain and making sure the villain is always present. Like, I think episodically, like almost like a TV show or a movie where you need your villain to show up, every so many scenes to make sure the presence is still there. And where the actual play, there can be that longer drawn out play because you're not necessarily they're not beating the villain every 44 minutes at the end of a TV show and you're moving on to the next one. You can stretch it out for a year if you really want to, depending on how you lay your arc. So that's really something I want to try to keep in mind in this iteration of Flight Risk. Because, as we've been doing our world building, we haven't really developed necessarily evil people. It's kind of like a classist societal, like evil of capitalism is the monster they're fighting. So it'll be interesting to see if someone organically develops into our Emperor Palpatine figurehead of the evilness. That'll be fun to explore. Okay, so evoking fear and empathy. This is something I know that I don't know if it's me or just the players I have at my table, but my players rarely take villains as an evil, like a fear, something they should fear. It's like I literally had a scene where they came face to face with Darth Vitiate, who was like, you know, the Darth Vader, the Emperor of the way back, you know, Star Wars era. And one of my players went up to him and tried to make him his friend. Like, tried to do almost like an informal, like, why are you so angry? What is with you trying to destroy destroy the Jedi? Where is that coming from? Like, let's open that up. And I'm like, this guy is like supposed to be the embodiment of evil. And you're like, come sit down. Let's talk and have some cocoa. But that's kind of, I mean, I guess my players are that way. And I guess I don't help in that sense, because later in that scene, I wrote a parody song and had the Emperor sing a song to them. So, you know, I probably don't help. But we talked about our villains' motivations. How do you make sure that they are threatening, that they are that thing that the players should fear, and not like, oh, we're not worried about, you know, the Emperor. He's just a goofball, silly guy. We'll get to him later. How do you make sure that when they are there, they're that sort of Damocles, as it were, hanging over their heads? We'll spin the imaginary wheel. And we're going to start with Sam. Sam, how do you get that villain to be properly villainous?
I mean, it's much like when meeting people in real life or characters. You can really only judge based on their words and their deeds. So, you know, like at the beginning of our story, the villains weren't saying anything, but the things that they had done that the characters encountered was speaking volumes. It was, by the time that they met the individuals that were responsible for this net that was cast, that had trapped them there. And then there was sort of, the spookier kind of horror elements as well. It was like, oh my goodness, you know, they certainly were shocked to learn what had happened. But I think that fear, I'm always a slow burn person. The tiger immediately jumping from the bush isn't as scary as hearing twigs snapping and you know, everyone sort of not fighting amongst themselves, but sort of the worry and concern that they have as characters building the anticipation for that big reveal. So, I think that taking time to really set up that moment really helps to bring in the fear factor. And good music doesn't hurt either.
That's true. That's when production comes. That's the extra card you can always play. So, Sarah, how do you make your villains properly villainous?
I make them better prepared than the party.
The Batman approach.
They know more. They may know about the party before the party knows about them. They have better resources. They're supposed to be this insurmountable thing that the party works towards defeating. So whenever players first meet villains in my game, the first encounter does not go well for the party. They get their behinds handed to them because they're not there yet. They're not on the same level as someone who has been plotting and planning their diabolical scheme or bid to take over the world their entire life. They have to get to that point. So the first round of instilling fear into them is usually kicking them across a battlefield somewhere. And the second is revealing that the villain has something that they are seeking or that they need. One of my players just found out that her long lost father is somehow tied to the villain because the villain taunted her with it as they walked away. So it instilled a drive to find this person again, but also that fight showed them that they landed a blow on this person and it didn't even faze them.
Yeah, that's always that good moment when the villain can just like say that one word or mention a name. It's like, how the heck do they know this? What? And then all of a sudden, like it like pauses everybody. It's like, wait, hold on. What, did we reveal something? How do they know this? That is a yeah. great. That's a great idea.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun to do.
Ben,
it's all as Sam and Sarah have said before. It's making them prepared and making them comfortable in their preparedness. That I really just take a look at the M. Bison approach from the 94 Street Fighter movie.
Classic.
Yeah. Like, I mean, Bison in that is just perfect villain to my mind, where they are just confident, they're there for their own reason, for doing their thing, and the players are at the beginning of their journey when they really meet them. So, sure, they may have some experience behind them, but this is someone who is at a much higher level. So, when they do mop the floor with them, they can do something like drop the bon mot of, oh, your sister's off doing this, or yes, I was the one who killed your brother. Something like that, and it's seeming like no big deal. Both elevating them as a monster, but also making it so that they barely recognize that this player group is more than just civilians.
Okay. It's not every day we get a good Raul Julia reference, and I do appreciate that. So, Erica, I'd love your input.
It's all about the introduction, and it's all about what the villain is really meant to represent for the character. When I kept thinking about different villains and everything, my brain kept going to Avatar: The Last Airbender. When we are introduced to Zuko, he's portrayed very much as this, like, Icarus rolling the boulder uphill. He's easily flustered by the gang and things like that. You kind of look at him and you see he's an antagonist, but he's not a true villain because he's made to look a little silly. You can see his desperation. You can, and all of that. But when it comes to his father, Ozai, for the entire first half of the first season is referenced, but never directly shown. And we see the power and the intimidation factor of him just based on what the Fire Nation does. So then when we are introduced to Ozai, you already have all of that buildup of, like, just speculation of, like, who he is, like, how he behaves, and you already have that, like, anticipation of just how cold-hearted he is because you know what he did to his children. So when it comes back to actual plays, how you introduce this villain to your players is important, because, like, you can listen to season 7 of Dice for Brains and you know for a fact that I am not at all intimidated by whatever his name was, because I couldn't even be bothered to remember his name. I was scornful. I was disdainful. He came across to me as, like, a pompous jerk. But when it slowly became clear that maybe Miss Walton is the true villain, and I wish we could someday revisit that and get more into that, because it felt left off at a cliffhanger there. But, like, how you introduce the character to your players sets the tone for the rest of the thing. If you introduce them as being kind of like a buffoon, then that's all your players are going to see them as. That's all your audience is going to see them as. If you introduce them as this intimidating character who could cause real problems and harm for your players, then they're going to be a little scarier.
It's definitely the power of a first impression.
Mm.
So now, with that, I always like my brain, because I'm a Power Rangers guy, I always think of the cliche sixth evil ranger thing, where this villain shows up, wipes the floor with all of the villains, and then later on it's revealed that they're just equally as strong as them. And now, like, well, where did all that extra power go? So how do we establish this villain as this wipe the floor ominous threat, but also make sure that when it gets time to the day when we want to have, you know, maybe that heroic one where the heroes actually do triumph, that we're not cheating it by making it too easy? How do you balance that opening threat with also making it a realistic battle that hopefully the heroes can win? This is for anybody.
I guess seeing the protagonists, your characters, your players earn it, because actual play shows like where we use our tabletop RPGs as a mechanic for the storytelling, the characters actively gain experience. We see them do that. So you can introduce your big bad Darth Vader like in the first few episodes, but you know that the players aren't going to be able to handle that threat until they're much, much, much stronger. So, like, you can introduce your big bad, and then you can have the smaller obstacles in their paths, you know, the stormtroopers, the governors, the ISB agents, whatever it is for Star Wars, and seeing the characters climb up that ladder to the big bad.
Fair. Okay. That makes sense. Now, with our villains, like, I'm a big fan of that villain you can empathize with, that, like, in the right light, in the right way, you can go, they're kind of right. They're not necessarily wrong. Do you guys have any experience making that villain that maybe in the right way could have been a hero? Is that something you guys have employed before? Again, this is for anyone.
Absolutely. I think that's just Magneto, though. Like, that's the Magneto. Like what you have to have Magneto when you have Xavier. Like, there's a lot that in the comics and especially in the newer movies that Magneto says that you're like, you know, he kind of has a point. maybe are the X-Men the bad guys? I'm not so sure in this moment. So I think it comes back to those moments of I can see myself in this person, and I can empathize with what their fight is. They're just going about it a very different way than the hero is.
My brain always goes to, I don't know how you pronounce, people always pronounce it differently, Ra's al Ghul or Ra's al Ghul.
Yeah.
He's trying trying to wipe out most of the planet because he's trying to save the Earth, and the world would be better if there was less pollution and maybe there'd be, you know, less people, more resources. You kind of get it. And it's like, well, you don't really shouldn't try to violently kill half the population of the planet to make this work, but I like where you're starting. You just went a crazy turn there, man.
Yeah, Poison Ivy tends to be another one too.
Yeah,
that's a character that she says some things in different forms of media, and you're just like, yeah, you know what, you're right. Humans have screwed up the Earth. We should probably reset things.
That would be a very interesting thing to try to build into the game. So as you're working against this villain, as they reveal more of their plan, what other motivation is, to maybe have your players realize, going, hold on, are we the baddies? are we not the good guys in this situation? That would be something to definitely try to build into. That would be a fun moment for the characters to actually question their own motivations, to stop back and really look at your world in a macro sense instead of the micro sense. Because a lot of times when we're playing the game, you're just looking at the session, your adventure right there. And I don't know, I know myself as a GM, I sometimes forget that there's an entire world outside of what's going on in front of my players. So if I have the Empire or whatever being this villainous threat, and my guys are fighting this one lieutenant over on Mustafar or whatever, the Empire is still out there doing other things. The world doesn't pause just because we're playing this session. So that is, I would love to hear how you... Do you guys run an internal, not a game, but like, do you guys have a checklist or a calendar or a schedule for the villain that things are happening off camera to keep the story, to keep them aligned with the heroes or keep their motivations moving? Is that something you guys employ?
Oh yeah, I know what my bad guys are up to right now in the first arc of Legends of Sisamon. I know exactly what they're doing right now.
I absolutely do. Even though I haven't really been running villains per se, I definitely know what the antagonists are going on, and just starting to really get everything into alignment with it has been kind of fun. I'm always just wondering how much to show of that. That's always been my fear with villains, is at what point does it become the villain show versus the player show? And that's always been my that's always where I've fallen down for how much to show of a villain.
Yeah, that is a challenging thing, because you have, like, to me, I like have like the reveal or whatever moment I think in my head is going to be amazing, and then like trying to find the right moment to put it, like too soon and it falls flat, too late and it's empty because we've moved past it and it doesn't resonate as strong. So I don't know, does anybody here have advice or have experience of maybe if they didn't stick the landing they wanted with a villain reveal or something like that?
In season one of Path of the Storm, the amount of time that the player characters really actually get to spend with the big bad Captain Zircon isn't that much. So to make up for that a little bit, we recorded like just little small scenes with Zircon to really drive up his intimidation factor, to like get the audience invested in him as a bad guy, sort of understand his motivations, because that's the beauty of an actual play podcast, is you can just add things if you want. It's like, this didn't happen at the table, it's okay, we'll do it in post.
I never honestly thought about that, like while like editing, if I could, god, I really wish I would have had the villain have a monologue or something. Like, I could just add it in post and no one but me and the players will know that it didn't happen in that order. That's where GM Dwayne and Editor Dwayne need to get on the same page. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So interesting. Okay. I like that. I'm making all these little notes off the side of things I'm going to need to remember to do.
Right.
That's why I like this.
It's absolutely something I'm going to take too.
So the next thing I want to talk about as we're discussing villain reveals and stuff like this, how much input do you have from your players in the creation of a villain? Do you start with a villain in mind, or do you allow like the players to say, you know what, I think it'd be cool if we were going up against a dragon lord who was, you know, a fire breather, all this kind of stuff. Do you have them give it to you, or do you feel your responsibility as the GM storyteller is like, you should have that on you? So we'll start with Sarah for that one. How much do you involve the players in the creation of the villain?
Not too much, because they're already subconsciously helping me create the villain when they hand in their backstories. And I have them get really involved in the world in other ways. For my most recent 5e campaign, as part of our Patreon, I sat down with each player individually for like 2 or 3 hours. We recorded together some world building, and I sat them down and I said, okay, tell me about your hometown. And so I solidly instead anchored them within the world and found out what's important to them, where their favorite restaurant is back home, who the family members are that they are most connected to, who's their favorite shop owner, who's their least favorite shop owner. I let them go full GM on me in this campaign for those 3 hours. And from that all informed who the villain was and what their motivations would be based on what these characters have to fight for. But I mean, like, yeah, if someone said like they wanted to fight Tiamat, like, sure, I'll let you fight Tiamat. It's not going to go well for you, but you know, we can do it.
That's the fun of being the say yes GM. Like, you want to do this? Okay, sure, let's do this.
Yeah.
Interesting. Ben, how about you? How much player involvement do you have with the villain building or the I realize I keep saying villain, and that may not be the right word. Maybe the antagonist or antagonistic forced.
In mine, it's been much more of a do we need a villain? Do we need a local villain as opposed to a greater villain? In the last season / 2.5 years of Heroes, it was just going into our second act of that, I got player feedback saying, well, we've got this big bad, but I need something a bit more close to the adventure to actually be playing off of. So I created out of whole cloth a villain that was more of a block to anything, like sort of a C-level or like a mid-level baddie, but someone that they could actually go up against and actually interact with a lot more. And that's the actual execution of that, how they're playing out. Not so much, but also actually a lot of what Sarah just said of the player actions, especially once I get around to making a villain, is based on what the players have done and what the what I perceive their weaknesses to be, so that I can have the villains start plucking at those. So that they can act as a foil and start showing off that the player characters are not these true godlike beings, that they have their own weaknesses too.
Yeah, I think with the with our party having played with them so much, just off of off air, essentially, I wanted villains that would, because we really do work with multiple entities, and some of them seem villainous, but then maybe aren't or whatnot. But having the villains kind of meet the requirements of the players and their characters' personalities, where the villains are, they sort of hit that sweet spot for them. You don't want something that's, you know, I have some players that aren't necessarily as into the personal aspect, or their character isn't into a personal aspect. They just want to be a brute force, having like some a very physical presence, or an incredibly strong enemy to go against is a lot of fun for that player. Whereas another one, it's, you know, the player is a little more meek or a little more personality based, and that's where all their strengths are. I want them to, you know, they're going into situations where they're able to rescue someone from the villain, or that's exciting for them. So you want to have a villain that's able to meet everyone's needs. And I think that when I was writing it out, I was like, I love horror comedy, and I think that's like, you know, horror comedy adventure, and I think that met all of their requirements and got them excited about playing again. So yeah, I don't know.
that makes a lot of sense. That I guess, yeah, with like maybe like having the player input was like knowing your players and knowing what kind of media, what kind of things they like. Like, you wouldn't propose a horror-ish villain if you're like, my characters are more like, they like the comedy, action, fantasy, adventure. They're not going to want to go against Freddy Krueger or something like right. that. They'd want a more diabolical, evil king type thing. So knowing your audience, your audience as well, but your players is important to make sure that we're not just trying to craft a great story or a great villain. We're trying to have fun at the table as well. So taking that all in, it is very, very important. So I think something that was just brought up that I didn't even think about is not just the importance of having our antagonist, our villain, be powerful, but also their enterprise, their agents, their minions need to be something that factors into our story as well. Because, you know, you have, again, my brain is always on Power Rangers because that's like 90% of my brain power goes to writing Tubular Teenage Titans. I think of the villains, and like you have your Zed, you have, they always have the putties or the Kentango, and they're like, there's these meaningless kind of empty minions that aren't really a threat. And I fear just having villain like minions just to have minions is kind of a weak, like, oh, let's just punch these guys, they're not a threat. How about making those lower level, like Ben was mentioning, the C level, B level villain? How do you build them as well, but not have them overshadow?
If we use the Power Rangers as an example, it's been a long time since I've watched, but isn't there a sort of villain of the week? Sort of someone that Zed's dispatching for the Power Rangers to actually deal with? That they're surrounded by putties, but they still are the actual villain that the players are going up against.
That's an interesting idea. Is that something anyone's employed? Like, say, I'm gonna, not so much maybe like villain of the week, or maybe like a, I guess, throwaway villain. Do you guys ever use that? Like, this is someone I'm going to introduce for this arc that I know is either going to die, get locked up, or whatever, but I know the heroes will defeat them. Do you guys create those? Do you have them in your back pocket? How do you guys make those guys a big enough threat for the current arc, but not an overwhelming thing? Once again, for anyone.
Well, for me, it comes to like how I think about the villain and what they need to complete their task. So when I introduced the villain of my 5e campaign, she wasn't the only one introduced. Her four main minions were also introduced as well in that fight. So essentially what will happen, if you are one of my players and you are listening to this, close your ears right now and go work on, I don't know, go work on some macrame or something. This is not for you anymore. But essentially those minions are going to be part of the journey to get to her as the final boss. She is her CR, if we're talking in 5e terms, her CR is so high, there is no possible way at level 4 they could fight her. Mm-hmm. But the first minion they come up against, they might be a level or two above them. There's still a chance that at level 6 or 7, they'll be able to take this person on. So it's one of those things where they're going to be tough enough that the party is going to have to work to fight against them, but it's going to feel like an accomplishment. It's going to feel like they were victorious, and it's going to push them towards fighting the next one and then fighting the next one. And I can just have the big BBEG just sprinkle in every once in a while and make their presence known without them having to actually fight her, because she will kill them. Yeah. She can kill them all four of them in one swipe. I don't want to TPK them yet.
Yeah. Not yet.
Yeah. But when it comes to like, those, like, I think of them like the foot soldier type minions, like the waves that come at you. Mm-hmm. I think it depends on what, first of all, like what system you're playing, and second of all, like what style of game your players are looking for. Because my players will talk to anything that is put in front of them. They will try to talk to a squirrel if I put it in front of them. And none of them are, well, one of them just took a level in Druid. But
it's gonna get worse.
It's gonna get worse. They also just got a party pet, so like it's out of my hands now. Like everything is just thrown out the window. But I like when they're real people. Mm. Like the best part when which Star Wars episode was it where we first meet Rey and Finn?
Force Awakens, episode 7.
Force Awakens. Yeah. For the first time, we're meeting a stormtrooper who doesn't want to be a stormtrooper. Like those people that are coming at you in waves, like those are people with real lives too. So just have like one or two bullet points in your back pocket about why are they there? Do they just need the money? Do they actually believe the person they're following? So it's you can do a lot with the little waves of minions that are coming at you if your players want to talk to them. But if you're playing with people who don't want to talk to them and they just want to, you know, shoot at a bunch of faceless stormtroopers, then, you know, that's totally valid, too. But I like thinking of a little tidbit here and there for those minions.
Reminds me of a TikTok I just saw, and it's like, you know, it's like the wonderful content Sarah makes with a DM talking to his players. Like, oh yeah, we just killed the town guards. Like, I loot him. He's like, okay, you find a note, and it's a mm-hmm. crayon drawing saying, "Dad, I'll see you soon. I miss you so much. I know it's been hard since Mom died, and we only have each other, but we'll get through this."
Oh no!
And it's like, and like that. I'm like, oh yeah. I'm like, oh my god. Like that. Like, oh, especially if you have like a couple players who like lean toward the murder hobo-y aspect of it,
mm-hmm.
dropping that on them and going, yeah, your actions have repercussions, man. Yeah. There's an orphan out there waiting for his dad. I think that is falls into that are we the baddies type situation. Oh my god, I'm the bad guy to that little boy. Your hero group is now his villain group. He's gonna spend his next 15 years training to be D&D Batman and go find you.
Yeah, I mean that's your campaign too, right there, is to hunt down the people who killed my dad.
Right.
But yeah, no, I totally agree. That's a great way to do it, and I think it comes down to like really having a strong session zero with players.
Yes.
And making it very clear that you don't have to fight everything. If you want to try and talk to something that speaks the same language as you, or you want to try and play charades and get your message across to them, definitely try to communicate first if you want. Because as we've seen with, you know, like a game like Baldur's Gate coming out, where they did give you EXP to talk your way out of situations rather than go into everything as a fight.
Oh, that's
Yeah, I think that's really smart of them, and I think it's kind of indicative of the shift that we're seeing in a lot of the more playing of the crunchy type combat games in the AP scene.
Yeah.
Is they're getting used a lot more and more to tell a story rather than just fight war game, which not everyone likes, and that's okay. That's valid. But I think when you make it very clear as a GM, if you're playing that sort of a system where combat is a heavy focus, and that's mainly how you get XP, saying, hey, I'm going to give you credit for getting past this, like whether you talk to these people or whether you fight them. So if you want to fight them instead, that's totally okay. Yeah, that's my soapbox. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk, everyone. It was a pleasure being here. I'll see you in the next one.
To build off of that, it's, you know, there's nothing wrong with a dungeon crawl. There's nothing wrong with systematically checking every room and, like, killing all of the monsters there and just making your way from point A to point B in the number-crunchy kind of way. That's kind of what D&D was built as. But in that session zero, when you are, as the GM, establishing the setting about your expectations for, like, what you think this story is going to be, like, what you are building for their characters to enjoy, that's where you set this tone. You're like, this isn't a dungeon crawl. This is a story where the majority of the conflicts are going to be more of a talk your way or think your way situation versus a blood and violence. Ben established that, like, very clearly with us for the newest season of Heroes of the Hiding Way. I love those posts about, like, the murder punishing, quote-unquote, the murder hobo players, but it's, did you set the scene well enough for them? Like, is that you punishing them for your bad communication, or is that you trying to push them back onto the path that you had all agreed on at the beginning, for one? I've lost my train a little bit, sorry.
No, that trains leave all the time, don't worry. It'll come back around in a minute. But I think that you guys bring up an interesting point about the systems kind of dictating the player's interaction with the antagonistic force. My experience, I literally never played a TTRPG. I never ran a game in my life. I started as a GM in the Fantasy Flight system, and what I loved about it was it was very narrative driven, and maybe I was just blessed with the players that I had, but they would go out of their way to find non-combative ways of solving problems, and it really intriguing, and I like the storytelling possibilities. We had, like, they had to sneak onto a, you know, a snow base and sneak in and steal, get some people out. I'm like, okay, it's going to be this stealthy Mission Impossible thing. No, they go in there and they set up and pretend to be party planners and throw the end of the year company lunch in, and they do all this stuff. And one of the players is a singer, so he's putting on a stage performance because a few arcs before we established he won a talent show, so now he's internet famous. So now he's a celebrity doing a random pop-up show. And it was this whole thing of just these kind of things where these villains that I had loaded to the bear with guns and traps are like eating snow cones watching this guy sing. And I'm like, it just... I loved it, and it just made me like laughing. Like all that planning I did, like, eh, they're having snow cones. It's fine. But I think
that reminds me of my very first session I ever GM'd. And I'm having like traumatic flashbacks.
I just think that if we would have been playing a more crunchy, like if you would have just been doing D&D, I don't know if that would have been as organically happening, because D&D is more like, I hit this thing, I missed this thing, I hit this thing, where the Fantasy Flight narrative thing is like, there's all these skills that they were able to use, and I think they shot one time at the end to set off a fire alarm so they could get out of there. That was the only violence they did.
Oh no. D&D does lend itself if the opponents are dumb enough to talking your way out of everything. Okay, so I'll tell you my first campaign, and then I'll let things get back on track. Well, not campaign, first one shot. I ran the Rick and Morty dungeon. Mm. It's supposed to be a classic dungeon crawl.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The only problem is that it's stocked with goblins. So my characters decided that they were going to walk in and persuade all of the goblins that they were there as the official dungeon inspectors for the realm. They were asking them about OSHA violations. Were they getting 2 15-minute breaks and a 30-minute lunch? And they went through, and they, I think there's something like 37 goblins throughout the whole thing. There's like goblins and a bugbear. And they talked to every single NPC in that dungeon. They didn't get any of the loot because the goblins had eaten all the loot. Like they had actually eaten the gold coins. So you were supposed to kill them. But yeah, that was my first traumatic experience as a GM. And I will never live it down. It's become a verb, being dungeon inspectored in my group.
Yeah,
I love that.
It's wonderful.
I love that. Now, does anybody have experience with systems affecting the way they run their villains? I'm sorry, Erica, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, it's all right. Yeah, I suppose.
Okay.
Like Sarah said with the D&D, if the villain, quote unquote, the bad guy is dumb enough to fall for it, it's... Your player could have said the most inspiring speech ever, but when they roll that die, if it's a one, the bad guy is likely not to fall for it, no matter how dumb or smart they might be. But on the other hand, if they roll, you know, a successful roll, then you have to adapt to that situation. It's very frustrating to have a persuasion score of 18 to any roll that I make and never be able to talk my way out of a fight. Very frustrating.
I can imagine. It's like your bag. Sam?
My very first time GMing, I didn't know anything about D&D, and they were playing 3.5, so I'd only sat in for maybe 5 or 6 sessions, and so I had an incredibly loose understanding. So I go in, and I'm like, all right, I spent hours, I mean hours, writing and like trying to figure out like a backstory for the villain and where they're going to come in, and I had all this elaborate scheme, and then, you know, things that were tricks along the way, and all of those things sort of fell flat once the player started playing. I was like, where are you going? I didn't expect that. So it's the same way with villains. I think that watching how they're responding to them, you have to be able to adjust, particularly in an actual play where everything's sort of recorded. You have to be able to adjust to like move into the lane that they're in, which is if you ever go in with expectations of it's going to be this, 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 and this, you're really just a conductor on a train, getting everyone on board and, mixing your metaphors. But you're getting everyone on the story you've already written, as opposed to they may decide they want to go into a shop and, just hide out, you know. There's so many different ways to approach an enemy, an antagonist, beyond just, fight or flight, you know. So there's, I love creative options because it's just much more enjoyable to listen to. But anyway, yeah.
No, that's all valid. Yeah, it's. I think as I'm hearing you guys express all this stuff, it is a delicate balancing act of trying to make the character engaging and something that entices the players, the heroes in the story, but you almost don't want it to be like the only thing in the universe is this villainous person, because then it becomes a very railroaded situation where everything is focused on killing King Lothagar or whatever his name is, and you want to have this bigger world. Now, my experience, I've only ever played games that I've recorded and released as content. Mm-hmm. I've never had a session that was just my friends around a table. We're playing for just, you know, shits and giggles. Now, does that temper how you run your villains, how you create your villains, whether you're creating it for audio content or just for friends around the table?
Not really. All of the people that I stream and record podcasts with, like, they're all friends. So whether we're recording or we're just sitting in, like, on a Zoom call, just privately playing just for fun, I always try to bring the same amount of care to my private games as I bring to the public facing ones, because I think all players deserve that. If you're going to show up and you're going to give me several hours of your time each week, consistently, I will write you a story that's going to be a lot of fun so that you keep coming back. And please stay, my friend. Please don't leave. The world is such a lonely and dark place. Please don't go anywhere. Come back. I'll make cookies.
I have dice, plenty of dice.
I'm the same GM on stream as I am off stream.
Yeah. GM wise, I don't think I'm very different. But it's a part of that initial conversation with your players, letting them know, like, hey, this is an actual play podcast, which means that we're not just going to be able to go off every single tangent. There is a storyline here, mm-hmm. that we do need to kind of stick to. So trying to be flexible as a GM to encourage your players' creative solutions while the story beats that you're trying to meet for this... for this recording are still met is a delicate balance that requires the communication with your players for the expectations that, you know, please don't throw the story too off the rails, like encouraging whatever cool funky idea that they're going to come up with that you could never anticipate, while still at the same time allowing a cohesive story to be told that will be enjoyable for people who are not current in the game to listen to.
Ben?
The biggest change for me is being a bit more family friendly in running an actual play. My personal games wind up with a lot more memeing, and I don't know what it is with the print charts and dice rollers, but they seem to like the maimed answer for crits. So,
jeez, Louis.
Lucky. And otherwise, yeah. It's just, since it's just people playing, no one else is looking in, it can be a bit more over the top, it can be a bit more, just a bit more, and it's what the group is wanting. So in a actual play setting, it's a bit more toned down. But that's about it. I'm still taking the same level of care to the story, to the players, to where are things going. But yeah, I'm just being a little bit more over the top, a little bit more just R-rated in a private game than a public game.
Sam. Yeah, precisely the same. And I do that they get on to me too for editing out some of their more colorful language. And I was like, well, you know, my thought is always, you know, our villains are can still be scary and it can still be grounded in reality without having to pepper in things that are going to make somebody want to turn their radio in their car down or something like that. And, you know, if kids listening, I don't think I describe things in a way that's very scary or use sound effects that would be jarring for a kid. But if there's a lot of expletives in there, it just doesn't have as big of an audience potential, you know.
I've had to have that conversation, too, with my actual play tables. And I don't think that's so much like a home game versus like an actual play thing. I think that's just like people who come into the actual play scene not understanding from the not a producer side, not the person who has to market it side, that there's so much when it comes to social media that works against shows being seen. And algorithms are really good at suppressing profanity. So it's one of those things that I've had to have a lot of conversations with my friends that I do bring out. I'm like, look, it's a PG-13 show, but that does not mean that we get one F-bomb per episode. It means we get none. Because for a long time, like, that was the joke. Like, in Session Zeros, like, my moderators would make, like, oh, well, it means, like, you get one F-bomb. But no one was tracking that one F-bomb.
Yeah.
So at a certain point, I was like, look, y'all need to watch your language or I'm cutting down the show even further and you're missing scenes. We'll still play the game we want to play, but if you want that moment to remain in the game, you're going to find a way to do it without profanity. But I don't think that has to do with my GMing style. That's just me being realistic about social media and the nature of the beast that we have to deal with as producers.
Yeah. No, that's very true. Now, do you... As you're planning your sessions and like what we talked about, you wanted those big villain moments, those villain reveal moments, the shocking things that kind of surprise your players. When you're running a game at your table, you can just have that shocking moment whenever because your players are going to come back next week. When you're running it as an actual play for content to be released, are you conscious of trying to stage things to have... I don't know if everyone, like, when I Flight Risk, we had seasons. So I knew after X amount of episodes, the season would end and I would do, like, a time jump or the story would change a little bit. Is that something you're aware of when you're planning your villain's arc, his story, that, okay, this season or our session of this is going to be X amount of episodes, so I got to make sure this minion, this lieutenant, like Sarah was saying, this lieutenant, they're going to fight him in episode a quarter of the way in, then a third of the way in, then the big reveal at the end. Is that a conscious thing you're planning or... You have the loose bullet points, and you hope as the story goes, it lands where it does.
Sort of. I'm still kind of new to this, to plotting my own show for an actual play. And Legends of Sysmon is an anthology. It's not one long, overarching campaign. So I have my bullet points. I have my names, bad guys, my named forces in this one little system, in this one little sector. And I'm interested to see, like, how the players are going to affect the events around them and the people around them and everything. Like, maybe that Commodore's time is up at the end of this arc because the players took care of them. Maybe they're not. Maybe they're going to get embarrassed or maimed or something, and we get to return at a later date with these characters for another part of this story. I'm not sure. I'm kind of playing it by ear. I've got my bullet points.
That's what I've been doing for about 5 years, playing it by ear.
Yeah.
Go ahead, sir.
I'm very much the same way. I don't do seasons because it's so hard to get people to come back for that second season, just with the way the world is and scheduling and people having real lives. So I tend to just do campaigns, and when it's done, it's done. But for something like Apocalypse Keys, I try to work in, I'm running the adventures that came with the Kickstarter, and I try to work in something that ties all of the adventures together into every single mystery. And there have been mysteries that it took them 2 sessions. There have been mysteries that it has taken them 4. So it all just depends on how long or how complex or and like how much they want to talk to people. With my 5e campaign, I thought they were going to leave the town that they were in 2 episodes ago, but they keep going around saying goodbye to people and kissing the ones that they've been smooching for the first arc of the campaign. So so it's one of those things where I show up with bullet points and roughly like at what player level I want them to be hitting a story beat or encountering things.
That makes sense.
Yeah, because I use EXP leveling to kind of inform how much I should be putting in front of them. But I don't. But they don't level off of EXP. They level off of milestones. So yeah. So I know the next milestone after they fight minion number 2, that's going to be their like what level 10 level up. Fight. So like that's kind of how I think of it. But I like to let the players drive the story at their pace, because the more invested they are, the better it makes me look. So.
Very, very true. Ben?
I followed the Leonard Stark form of planning. Make the plan, execute the plan, expect the plan to go off the rails, throw away the plan. Like, I do go in with plans, and weirdly enough, when someone's saying I need to leave the show by X amount, by X time, I can plot out very weirdly where each major beat is going to be. Just by that time, I know the characters and the adventures so well that I'll give a general idea, but like major villain reveals or dramatic reveals, I'm mostly just thankful when they show up about a little bit early so I can just stop it on the cold, like stop the episode recording and it just be a slightly shorter episode. So in 6 weeks when I'm actually doing the editing, I get a day off. But generally it's, I go in with basic plans, but it's not true major. Like, yeah, bullet points, seeing where, what have we hit, what haven't we? Because the players always find something interesting, something that I never would have thought. I've, in 2 of my seasons, I have done the adventures at the back of the book, or the GM screen adventure for just to play out his prologue. The adventure at the back of the book is supposed to take, it's a convention module, it's supposed to take at most 4 hours. I think I've got 10 hours on just on what the players were able to do, and then we'll be improv from it. And there were villains and characters that showed up in that that then go on for the entire season. It's I love the chaos of players, and I just lean into that to no end. So, yeah, I have bullet points, but timing, dramatic timing, it's all luck, at least in my frame of run.
Fair, Sam?
Yeah, the planning with my group is almost impossible. They're such free spirits, and I think that's what, when I'm listening to it and I'm trying to edit it, I'm trying to like highlight those parts. You know, I want to bring out those like fun spark moments where they've got an idea and they kind of run with it. And I think that, I have a loose framework. I have a population. I know where the people are at in the general area that they're going. And I have some characters that I've sort of loosely developed, and we just I have so much fun with improv. It almost is the same way with the villains. You know, by the time by the time I get to you know, the end of the first season, my idea for what the villain totality is has changed. Maybe not a 180, but it's, you know, it's 90 degrees off. It's 100 degrees off of what my original thought and plan was. So I try to just and you know, the improv portion, especially with comedy, it sounds fresher when you're sort of, you know. Of course, there are times where it's not working. The comedy's not working, and so that's another thing. But the improv and the keeping your plans loose really keeps the story open, essentially open ended, and doesn't make them helps my players feel like they don't have to operate inside of a box, basically. So yeah. Anyway.
So now we're getting to the end, and I like. I get inspired by other people's storytelling and things like that. So I'm just wondering if you wouldn't all mind sharing one of your favorite villain moments you either experienced as the GM or as a player. Now, as we know, we're all producing content. I don't want you to reveal anything that's going to be coming out in 3-4 weeks or a month for your players. But from your experience playing the game, what is a villain moment, either, again, as a player or as a GM, that really sticks out in your head that when you look back, it gives you that this is why I love what we do type vibe? Like, for me, for Flight Risk, we had Darth Vitiate, and it was fun playing this kind of overpowered, because I reskinned, like, literal Darth Vader from FFG, and that was who I was using. So, and that's like, you know, all his things are 4 reds for all the players, and it's like, it was crazy. And just to have my players, knowing how strong this character was, because I didn't lie, I'm like, this guy's like Darth Vader. And having Kyle as Skip try to charm the Emperor and almost succeed. He had no successes, no failures, and I think he had 2 advantages. And he had his advantage, like, well, if I ever meet the Emperor again, he's going to like me a little bit more. And that was all he wanted. So I'm like, he doesn't hate me. I'm like, okay, fine, I guess he'll like you a little bit. And I know his plan is to eventually, or if we would have kept going, to eventually become friends with Darth Vishy, which is just crazy. And on the other side, we had another scene in a different arc where Nimoy was playing their Mandalorian, and he's like, I'm going to shoot him. I'm like, that's Darth Vishy. Like, I'm going to shoot him. I'm like, okay. And he takes a pot shot at the Emperor, and just having these two players react to the same villain so differently is just so much fun. So that's, like, to me, when I think about villains, that it just, like, even now I'm just smiling thinking about how ridiculous both those situations were for me. So I will spin my magical wheel, giving you guys about 5 or 10 seconds to think of your favorite memory. Do we'll put some music, hold music here, maybe like the lady from Impunimula or something. some Kenny G. And we will start with Erica. Erica, what is your fondest villain memory?
So the fun fact is that I am still so relatively new at this. I have made these villains, and I haven't gotten to pit my players against them yet. So I'm trying to, like, dig through my memory as a player as well, and I'm still just kind of like, I feel like a lot of the moments that I've had as a player with villains, it's not really been that big dramatic, like, confrontation with the villain. It's been more the stories that I've focused on have not been against a big bad. So I'm trying to, I'm struggling. Like, you asked that question, and I've been sitting here like, I don't know.
It's like, I'll say, I'm an educator, so it's like, sometimes a teacher can see the kid that's not prepared, and you just want to call on him anyway. Because, like, is she not prepared because she wasn't paying attention? Let's put her on the spot for funsies.
No, I was paying attention.
Building moment. All right, we can come back to you.
Here.
We'll bounce over to, do you have one?
In the first episode of Legends of Sysmon, I have my basic story structure of how I want this story to go, but I let the players sort of their luck dictate on when it was going to happen. They made their perception rolls to see what they would pick up around them, And it wasn't until almost to the very end that they had a successful perception check, and they had also built up enough threat that I was able to flip the coin off of, like, introduction to them to introduction to the problem. And that was very satisfying for me. 'Cause if it had happened too soon, then we wouldn't have gotten a lot of great moments that we did get.
Well, sometimes the gaming gods are friendly to us, and they help us out when we need them.
Yeah, and they reacted with the... they reacted with the... gravity of the situation and the fear that I meant to inspire, and that was nice.
That sounds very satisfying as the game master.
Mm-hmm.
Sam,
I think one of my favorite moments was so they've found this derelict ship out behind the asteroid. It's the ships of a stranded travelers, and they board one following an enemy to try and capture them. The enemy escapes back onto their ship and disconnects. Anyway, they eventually reconnect, and as they're coming down, from out of the depths of the ship comes a Bogwing. And I'm thinking, okay, well, this will just be a spot where maybe the enemy appears, and then also the Bogwing is there, and they're kind of caught between the two, and let's see what happens with that. Well, before I can introduce the main enemy they've been trailing, Vickers changes the whole scene by going like he's calling the Bogwing over like a cat, and I'm like, what is he doing? Like, I mean, you know, I was thinking, like, this is a creature, it's a vicious creature. I described him as slobbering, you know, and you know, try to paint a you know, something from the wild has gotten aboard, or I don't know, and he successfully charms the Bogwing, and later on the Bogwing joins them in fighting the enemy. So I thought it was such a great, like, twist of fate, and I really enjoyed the fact that, you know, obviously it's not a villain, the you know, the motivations are different for creatures usually than for sentient species and whatnot in the universe, but I thought it was a really cool twist, and then of course they have a Bogwing that is now you know, helping them guard the ship, so that's kind of fun.
It's always fun when they subvert your expectations.
Right.
Like we were talking about before, where not everything has to be punchy, punchy, kicky, kicky.
Mm-hmm.
They saw another solution, so that's awesome. Ben?
My favorite villain interaction that I can remember, essentially off the top of my head, is one of my villains kept on bringing Biscuit Baron biscuits to every interaction until the actual fights. So essentially bringing a box of donuts, leaving a business card saying, get in contact with me, because they're doing a very Bullock thing of, you're trying to find these things, I'm trying to find these things. Well, if you ever want to, just, we could team up, you know? We could be buddy-buddy. And, yeah, they kept on thinking they were poisoned. It was great.
Oh, God, I had forgotten about the biscuit.
The biscuit baron, yes.
Oh, my goodness. That is awesome. Sarah?
Well, I mean, my BBEG reveal is pretty great, but I think one of the minor characters and his resulting death is probably one of my favorite, I'm going to say antagonist, not necessarily villain. But I had this character who was the mayor of the village that they were in. And my party decided right off the bat, they did not like this guy. So I was like, okay, well, we'll lean into that. We'll see if you feel the same later down the line. So they get invited to this mayor's house for dinner. They don't like him. They're creeped out by him. They don't bother to ever interact with him prior to this dinner unless they absolutely have to. So they don't try to talk to him, get to know him at all. And this dinner was a murder mystery. And he got murdered. So then they have to, then I got to watch them go through his house. I based it off of Clue. I got to watch. Yeah. I had Thomas Curry, the goblin, as the butler.
Oh, my God. Okay. I'm going to need a link to this because I'm going to have to listen.
Yeah.
To it.
Yeah. I will send you the podcast link. But they go around the house and they discover that he is essentially like the last surviving member of this group that was responsible for essentially serving Tyr. And this group had a lot of influential power previously throughout the world, which will come into play later in the campaign. If you're one of my players, tune out now. But they go through and they discover like he's just this guy who had like this huge weight just dumped on his shoulders out of nowhere and was just not handling it well and didn't have anyone that he could talk to handle it. So I got to watch as, well, we didn't really like the guy. Like, I'm kind of glad he's dead. Go to, oh shit, this is a person. He was like, we probably could have helped him type of a moment. And they did find out like the whole reason for them being there is he was going to ask for their help that night in dealing with the situation and keeping his loved one safe. So it's, that was a lot of fun to watch them go through and play through.
That is awesome. Yeah. That sounds amazing. So yeah, I just want to thank all of you guys for your time today. This is, again, I can't wait to go back and listen to this and pull out all these gems that I know I'm going to be using for this new iteration of Flight Risk. I'm probably going to gently use the term steal or borrow some of these great ideas and drop them in. I don't know. Maybe I'll have a muffin maven into my story instead of a biscuit maker. Be just as fun. And, you know, you can't go wrong with using Clue as part of your thing. So, Sarah, thank you so much for that.
Yeah.
We'll just go around the virtual table right now, give a chance to, again, tell you who you are, what you do, and where they could find you on the social medias or on the interwebs. So we will start with Ben. Ben, please let us know where we can find you online to get more of your wisdom.
Website is thehydianway.com. That was a fun snag. You can find all the links at linktree.com/thehydianway to current seasons, past feeds for ones that have shuffled off the main feed. And yeah, generally that's what you can find. The show itself is currently disaster response and trying to do something that is not combat focused in Star Wars.
So, Ben, how many episodes are there of Tales of the Hydian Way?
Tales of the Hydian Way, which is the talk version where it was discussions between me and a bunch of other people, I've got 301. And that is...
Wow.
I stopped doing that on account of I made a promise to myself I will only ever edit one show at a time. So when I went to doing the editing on Heroes, I had to set aside Tales. And that one, I started doing Heroes early 2020. It was a fun change. And then Heroes, at this point, I think we've got similar amounts. Like, we've had, Heroes has been going for 6 years, and Tales went for 6 years as well. And I was just noticing this August, Tales is 10 years old.
So, yeah. Yeah, anybody who is listening, who's taking this advice, it's like, I need to know more about running games and things like that. Tales of the Hydian Way is a great resource. I don't know if there's a topic Ben has not discussed at some point in length with a variety of very talented people. So if you're looking for that information, definitely check out Tales. It is a wonderful, wonderful resource. Sam. Go ahead and let us know where we can find you on the lines.
Yeah, the Starbirds are at Starbirds Pod on Twitter and or X, and at Starbirds Podcast on Instagram. Also on the Nightcast Discord. Links to those are in our show notes and whatnot. Yeah, and personally, you know, I don't post very often, but when I do, it's on X, and it's usually something. You know, something about the Jaguars football team or something along those lines. It's but yeah, that one is Sam at Sam Emery 8204 or at Sam Emery 82, I think. Yeah. Yeah. I don't even know my own address. So
yeah. If you look up Starbird and Sam Emery, you will find.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
All right, Erica.
You can find me on Instagram on the Nightcast Discord as Erica Goodwitch. If you want to see all of the things that I've done, which I might need to update a little bit now, I have a linktree.com/Erica Goodwitch. And you can also check out my new show, Legends of Sysamon, on my website, goodwitchstudios.com, and my Instagram at goodwitch.studios.
And remember, as the premier actual play mercenary, Erica is available for any game. Reach out. Gladly join your campaign.
So, Erica, I've been meaning to ask.
It's like the A-team. You just got to meet her price, and boom, she's there. And last but not least, Sarah.
Yeah, you can find me everywhere on social media as The Hype Goblin. If you'd like to know more about my actual plays, when they're going live, and catch any of those in their podcast form or on YouTube, you can find all those links on hypegoblin.com.
Again, everybody, all this information will be in the show notes, links to their social medias, links to all the content they create. Definitely check all of this stuff out. They are, it's as entertaining, it's educational. What else are you doing with your time? Come on now, people. This is great stuff. Please check them out. Again, thank you all for coming on. I love you all. I will bug you more and more online when I have more questions, because now you are in my friend circle and you will now have to get all my questions all the time now. That's part of the contract you signed. Always read the fine print.
Wait, there was
a
contract?
It's a two-way street. Joke's on you. I can't
believe. Verbal contracts are binding in some states. So.
All right.
You're not trapped in here with me. I'm trapped in here with you. Wait. That's not
one of those. That's a different
Shoot.
Show.
Is it, though?
Right and wrong are a rich man's game. All we've got is the road ahead. Welcome to Flight Risk, Dark Skies. A full sound, full performer curated actual play experience. Set in an original diesel punk western world. Releasing in arcs wherever podcasts can be found.
Okay. Excellent.
See the little wavy lines going up and down when I talk?
Awesome. I also see the little wiggly lines, and the best part is I don't see any of the constant background buzzing in my thing, so I'm... Yes. The past 2 hours of rearranging my closet have worked.
There you go. You put the sweaters in just the right spot to dampen the sound. You gotta find the right sweater.
My computer, like, actual box was up on top of the desk, so I've rearranged everything to put it under the desk.
Okay, there you go.
Nice.
All right. Okay. Oh, there are my notes. Okay, too many tabs. All right.